Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. And with my co-host, Tom.
Tom Majeure.
And it is one of our favorite programs, well, especially Tom's favorite program.
That's right.
But lots of listeners, too. We have Gary Heilig, the Garden Guy.
Hello.
Hi, Gary. And we just love to talk to you. You are, I mean, this was your vocation. Mm-hmm. You are retired now.
Yeah, I worked for Michigan State University for 34 years as a horticulture educator.
So we are very privileged to have Gary for this program.
That's
aren't we?
Right. You know, when I'm out in my garden, all of a sudden these programs rerun through my ears, and I'm thinking, well, am I doing this right? And so on and so forth. So I got to go back and look at the files and check it out.
Okay. All right. Well, Tom, why don't you have a word of prayer?
Sure. Our Father in heaven, we just love being out in your garden. And there's a peace that passes all understanding when we're digging in the soil and we're realizing that we're cooperating and coordinating with you. Be with us as we explore and become more knowledgeable of how to nurture and to steward your creation. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Okay, well, Gary, we're in the month of July, and for a lot of the nation, not just Michigan, and then we do have our one station in Illinois, but there's been so much rain, people are not just farmers, but gardeners are behind planting, aren't they?
Yeah, Tom was talking about loving to be in the garden. Now, the way the weather's been, you might not come back. You sink down. It's been like Rainageddon.
Rainageddon, that's a good one.
But when I look at my garden, I just shake my head and I tell my wife, let's go to plan B because
really,
we planted tomatoes and we mudded them in.
Oh.
And they just aren't doing well at all. And we haven't been able to plant about half our garden because it's been too wet.
Too much water is not good. Too little water and too much water. So I always tell my farmer husband, it's too hot, it's too cold. Farmers are never happy. It's too wet, it's too dry. But that's very true. We need almost just right.
Yeah, but if you're a home gardener, too dry is better than too wet because you can always add water, but you can't take it out of the soil very easily.
Right.
Now, I'm just curious, and this is kind of a personal question that I think that others can relate to. I had some things that didn't come up this year, and I'm just wondering, besides the rabbit that I think took a row of beans out, does too much water, is that possible that some of my seeds did not germinate, like my corn and some of my squash?
Yeah, that's very possible because we planted green beans, and none of them came up. What happens is it's so wet that fungi in the soil actually cause the seed to rot.
Oh, I see.
And so you end up having to replant, but it just hasn't dried out enough to really do that.
Oh, well, you know, and you say replant. As I was replanting earlier this week, I did find a seed that never sprouted. So,
So it's no good then? It's died?
Well, are we talking about a bean, for instance?
I think this one happened to be a squash.
Okay. Well, a squash should be up within 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks. And if it's there for 3 or 4 weeks, that seed is not going to come up.
Start over. How late can we still replant? What can we still replant?
Yeah. Well, there are a number of things that you can plant, but you have to start thinking about short-term stuff. For instance, if you put in transplants like tomatoes or peppers, they're not going to produce until the end of September, depending on what varieties you have. Mm-hmm. So you may not get the highest production because you weren't able to get things in. We're going into July right now.
Right.
So you need a certain amount of time. You might get green beans if you put them in now, but again, it's going to be late September. If you were growing bunching onions, for instance, you could get those. Herbs you could still put in, like, for instance, somebody putting in cilantro or the Italian herb. I'm having a senior moment
That's okay.
Basil. There it is.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, my brain's like a big bingo game, and the right ball has to come up at the right time.
Okay.
But anyway, so there are a few things that, like, lettuces and greens and spinach, those types of things, you could still get
something. A lot
of your
leafy cauliflower. Leafy plants usually have a short germination and harvest cycle.
They're pretty fast. I mean, you could still get radishes because they only take like 28 days to grow from seed to harvest. So you can still do some things. One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to put some tomatoes in pots and I'm going to move them into the greenhouse.
Okay.
And try to get the rest of my growing season in the greenhouse before it gets too cold.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If you started some things, you said, you know, some things won't be available, you know, really to harvest till maybe September, late September.
Maybe even October.
Okay. So we need to pay attention that time because you could get some frost. So you want to make sure you can protect your plants since you started later because it was too wet. You don't want them to frost out.
Well, also, when we start to have cooler days, plants grow slowly.
Right.
And once we start having those cooler days, if you're not getting a harvest by then, you're not likely to get one.
Okay. So with all this rain, what about spraying fruit trees? Because people want to spray the fruit trees to make sure those bugs aren't going to ruin them.
I gave up.
Oh, too much rain, right?
Oh, no.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, we had the polar vortex this last winter, and I happened to be in a cold spot in Eaton County. And as I went through, when we were pruning and things, there were very few apples. And when you have 70 apple trees, it costs a little bit of money to spray them. So if there aren't enough apples there, I don't spray. But even if I was spraying this year, it rained so much that you would have to spray a lot more often, and which would increase your cost. Now, if you had a couple of backyard trees, you could still do it. But then if you just have a few trees, it's not an economic problem. But if you have a bunch of trees like what I have, mm-hmm. then I need to think about, is it worth the cost of putting on a spray?
Right, okay.
So I don't expect to have too many apples.
So if you missed a couple early sprays, are we past most of the spraying for the year?
Well, at this point, you would have already been spraying for the early diseases like apple scab. And that's a superficial problem. So if, say, for instance, you're processing your apples or just eating them at home, that's not an issue. It's more of an issue if you're going to a farmer's market. Now, as we get into July, there's some more fungal diseases that you have to protect. But the biggest insecticide spray is usually what we call the petal fall spray, which covers Plum cucurulio, which leaves a mark on the fruit, which lowers its value. But again, most of the time, the larvae don't survive. So you just have this scab on the fruit itself. Now, codling moth actually will drill to the middle of the fruit where the seeds are developing, and that will make it useless. And so if you didn't get that spray on around petal fall, then most likely you already have quite a bit of damage on your trees.
Mm. Okay, so it is pretty much too late for spraying.
To have ideal, but depending on how many trees you have and how much fruit is on the tree, you will always find some fruit that the insects miss. And what I would do is go out and evaluate what the fruit looks like right now. If it's really bad, just pull it off because you most likely should be thinning anyway. And then evaluate how much is left and whether it's worth it for you to continue to spray, because there are still sprays to be put on.
That's good. Good advice. What about strawberries, the June and the everbearing?
Well, we're finishing up on the June-bearing strawberries. Now, depending on what variety people are growing, there are some newer varieties that actually will still be producing in July beyond what we would normally think of as the June-bearing strawberries. But the reason I put that on there is as we go into the season, you have more of a problem with the spotted the spotted-winged Drosophila, which is a fruit fly. And it's different from most fruit flies in the fact that it will attack ripening fruit as opposed to fruit that's breaking down and fermenting. So if you have ever-bearing strawberries, which usually will cycle, like the day neutrals will cycle about every 6 weeks, you'll get a crop. And the ever-bears aren't as prolific, but they still will produce on into the summer. And that fruit fly will start laying eggs in your fruit, and you'll get little maggots in it if you're not treating those later strawberries. In June, you can get away with it because their numbers are low enough to where you're not likely to have too much of a problem.
What type of treatment do you use for those?
Well, there are a couple of insecticides. If you want to do it organically, there's a product called Spinosad that works really well.
How do you spell that?
S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D.
Okay.
And they normally carry it at Tractor Supply Company, but you can also get it from Amazon. But it's not a commonly available organic material unless your garden center specializes in organic materials. And then just a common insecticide like malathion, which is used on vegetables, ornamentals, and fruits, will also control them quite well. And if you want to know how many you have in your area, there is a trap that you can make that will give you an indication if they're in your area. And I have a video that explains that on my YouTube channel if people want to put that together.
Okay, so let's talk about that. How do people, what they go to Gary Heilig, go
just,
to YouTube.
Just my name, yeah, Gary Heilig, H-E-I-L-I-G. You could Google Gary Heilig's YouTube channel, it'll take you right to
okay.
it.
Okay, yeah, because he's got lots of good information, folks, so you should check it out. I have a question regarding, you know, the strawberries, you know, the June or the Everberries. Is there a taste difference?
Well, the taste difference comes with varieties, not so much, okay. Whether it's a June bearing or an ever bearing type.
Okay.
And it's highly variable within a variety itself. So you can taste one strawberry that will be very sweet and the next one not so sweet. Mm. The flavor is very variable even within the variety.
Okay. All right. What about pruning? You know, because it seems like you always should be pruning your trees, you know.
Well, I would not do any pruning on trees like oaks right now because they can get a disease called oak wilt, and it can kill your tree. But I just finished a pruning video on pruning yews, and normally you like to get that done after the first flush of growth. There's like two or three times when you can prune them, but that's something you might want to do. If you didn't get around to pruning your lilacs after they bloomed, I'd get right to it. It's not going to harm the tree or the plant if you did some pruning. Now, for regular ornamental trees, for instance, if somebody had a maple that has some branches that have died, you can do that any time of the year, anytime okay. branches die. Or if you want to trim branches up like you're doing a limbo when you're trying to cut under the trees, bending over on the mower, which I do sometimes, it's time to get out the loppers and whack off of some of those branches, especially when they get wet, they'll hang down very low and it makes it difficult to cut under them.
Some of those branches can almost peel you off the mower if you're riding it.
Yeah, you have to be careful. I've had some of the branches that will actually hit the power lever and will lower the power on it. So when it gets that low, it's time to do something about it.
Okay, well, let's talk about roses. Because roses seem to die very easily in Michigan. Why is that?
I put that on there because I used to get a lot of questions about, I had these great roses and they're dead this spring. And usually it's because people did not control a disease called black spot. And they will drop their leaves prematurely. And of course, in a year like this one, where we have a lot of rain, fungal diseases do very well. And I was over at Michigan State University the other day taking pictures of roses, and they have black spot already started. So if you don't control that, it does cause defoliation. And in the later summer and going into the fall, when the plants should be storing sugars that are produced in the leaves, they can't do that because the leaves have already fallen. And you'll see there's some differences between roses. Not all of them will get black spot as much as other varieties. So take that into consideration when you're choosing what to grow. And what happens is during the winter months, plants, when they're dormant, they're still using stored sugars. If they run out, it's like a battery running dead. And it dies.
Okay.
So control those things. And by the way, we're just a little bit past the peak of blooming roses. So if you'd like to go to gardens and see roses, now's the time to do it.
Now you're saying, so control. Exactly what do they need to do to control?
You have to use the fungicide.
Okay.
And the fungicide has to be put on as a preventative.
And when should that be done?
It should be done just as soon as those leaves are out and the weather conditions are right for disease. And there are three things that you need for a disease to develop. First, you need a susceptible host. Check. No problem. Second thing you need is the pathogen has to be present. And a lot of people don't clean up the leaves from their beds. So those spores are being released right in their bed. And then the last thing you need is the proper weather conditions, which we said that with fungal diseases, you need long periods of wetness on the leaves. So if you are watering, it's better to have a soaker hose under mulch, for instance, so that the leaves aren't getting wet, because it starts down at the bottom and moves its way up. Or don't water in the evening if you are wetting the leaves, but you can't do anything about the rain.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, you could. You could put a covering over your roses so they don't get wet, but nobody's going to do that.
It's labor intensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what about planting trees? Can you plant them anytime, or there's a better time?
Well, the best time to plant trees is in the spring and in the fall, because the weather is less stressful on a new plant. But if you're going to plant a tree, you want to be sure that it has a really good root system. I bought some fruit trees this spring, and I potted them up because it was too wet to plant.
Yes.
And I looked at those roots and I said, these don't look good at all. And the trees never did anything. So I have to have a discussion with the company that sent them.
Oh, okay.
But
when you got them, they looked okay when you got them?
No, the roots didn't look very good at all. Okay. They just didn't have the kind of roots that would help it to survive.
Okay.
But had I planted them, they still wouldn't have survived. Mm-hmm. But I had put them in pots until I could get them planted. But if you're going to plant this time of year, you want to be sure that you have a tree that has good roots. Most of the trees you're going to be planting right now are container-grown plants, which means they've been in a pot at least 1 year, and they'll have better roots. The most important thing after you've planted the tree is making sure it's well-watered. Now, this year you might not have to do a whole lot.
That's right.
But when you get into July and August, when we traditionally don't have as much rain, you're going to have to keep a close eye on it. If you're not good at that, there are these watering bags that you can buy, and you see them if you ever go to a university or commercial buildings, they'll put those bags on the new trees, and then they only have to fill them up every now and then because they hold quite a bit of water, about 5 gallons or so. And it slowly leaks out around the trunk of the tree, and that keeps it in good shape.
Do you know what he's talking about? I'm trying to visualize
Sometimes cities you also use that.
Yeah.
And I've seen them to be green.
They're
color?
Green, and they're kind of conical shape, and they go around the trunk, and they just fill them up with a hose. They're usually about 2 feet high.
Two feet high.
So they're really good for making sure that your trees are well watered.
When it's a dry year.
Yeah, when it's a dry year. This year, you probably wouldn't have too much trouble with that, but they still need to be watched.
And you were talking about your trees that didn't have a good root, healthy roots. How do you define that? I know you know what it looks like, but I may not know what a healthy root looks like.
Well, basically, we're talking about the root mass, the number of roots.
Okay.
And now, if you were to open up a package, and we're not talking about container-grown plants, and all the roots are looking a little dry and there's not very many of them, that tree is not going to do as well as a tree that, when you look at the roots, you see new white roots growing off of the ones and there's lots of them. Mm-hmm. So the more roots you have, the better chance you have of that tree surviving.
Okay,
well, folks, listen, our time is quickly going. We need to take a break, but stay tuned because we have more information with the Garden Guy. We'll be right back.
Strong Tower Radio publishes a monthly newsletter about the ministry's progress and listeners' response. Get the free subscription just by calling 231-468-2087. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And we've been talking to Gary Heilig, our garden guy, right,
That's
Tom?
That's right. My favorite show.
Yes.
Hey, listen, we were talking about trees as we went into the break, and tell us about tree spades. Now, some people think that's a little bit of shovel, but that's not what we're talking about.
Well, when people bring in a tree and a tree spade, it allows you to transplant a much larger tree. So
this is a commercial company.
Yeah, a commercial company. They usually have a nursery, and they can bring in a 30-foot tree.
Wow.
If your land can handle the weight of a tree or a truck like that.
So today you don't have a tree, and an hour later the tree spade comes in and you got a instant tree.
That's right. And what I did when I had bought one tree, actually I bought two trees, and the guy I knew at the nursery, and I told him, bring the largest tree spade that you can carry.
Okay.
And the reason I did that is because I wanted him to get all the roots.
Right.
And usually they'll try to, there's a minimum size based on the size of the tree they try to get, but I wanted it oversized because if I get all the roots, then that really increases the chances of that tree surviving.
Well, that's what you talked about, how important roots are, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, you know, also, if you happen to live and you have some extra acreage, is it possible that you can transplant on your property and say, hey, I got that, and I would like that put someplace else?
Yeah, yeah, they'll do that. Just as long as they can move around.
They can access it.
Yeah, and I'd be careful, too, in terms of if somebody's going to be driving on your property, that if you're out in the country and you have a drain field, don't drive over that.
Crush it.
That's yeah, right. That's,
that will ruin it, and that'll set you back about $12,000 to $15,000 to fix that.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, let's talk about lawns. We've talked about trees. So what about, do weed killers work on lawns?
They do, but this is not the ideal time to put it on. The ideal time to put on lawn weed killers, and I'm talking broadleaf weeds right now, like dandelions and plantain and things of that sort, is in September when the plants are starting to store up their sugars for the winter, and those chemicals are translocated down to the roots and it kills them. The second best time is in the spring when they're just beginning to emerge because the plants are at a weaker condition after going through the winter and they have very low reserves of sugars, and you can knock them out more easily at that time. If you were to spray some of the products you have, you may get some kill of the younger weeds, but the larger established weeds, it'll probably just burn the leaves and not completely kill them.
And for instance, dandelions, if you've ever pulled up a mature dandelion, that taproot is...
It'll go down about 8 inches.
Yeah, I have a more appreciation of dandelions after going to an herbal seminar. Because they're dandelions are good for us. We might not like them in our lawn, but they are good for us.
Well, you can buy dandelions at grocery stores. They are larger leaves than what we would normally see
they're
out there.
They're cultivated.
Yeah, they're cultivated dandelions. And also, I think I mentioned in one of the earlier programs that the flowers, when they first come up in the spring, which most people can't stand, is a good source of pollen for bees when there's not very many flowers out.
Yeah.
So they do have their function in nature.
And talking about weeds, this actually happened last week, but it had roots in 2 years ago. We had some guests staying at our house, and we were I was working in my very small garden, my 10 by 10 garden back in the old days. And she walked out and says, "What are you doing?" She was from another country, and she said some of the weeds that I was harvesting were edible.
I had that happen to me.
I think she said it was parsellini or something.
Purslane.
Purslane. And she salvaged those out of my weed pile, and she put them on our salad, and they had a delightful taste.
Yeah, lamb's quarter, purslane, red root pigweed. There are a number of weeds that we throw away that are edible. So when times get tough, remember those three plants.
That's
so,
right.
So you need to know what they look like then. You need to educate yourself.
Well, I got another part to that story. So last week I get back from camp meeting and the weeds had grown. They had, plenty of moisture and sunshine. And I remembered these weeds that we had eaten. So I took a picture of three different weeds that I thought were good candidates. And I found out that two of the three were delightful edible. And we harvested them and we had them on our salad.
Put them in the salad.
Yes, one of them had kind of a lemon flavor to it.
And oh, isn't that amazing?
A nice compliment to our salad.
So talking about the lawns, and we were talking about weeds. What about mowing your grass? What happens if you don't mow it, especially because it's too wet? It gets, besides getting tall.
Yeah, I'm experiencing that right now. I have a grass seed on the plants now. They've gone to seed because we have standing water in our yard. And there's just nothing much you can do about that until it dries out. But normally when we mow a lawn, you don't want to try to take off more than one third of the blade at a time. And we try to get people to keep their lawns up around 3 inches year round. And the reason for that is it helps to have a thicker lawn. And if you have a thicker lawn, then you tend to have fewer weed problems because they're crowded out by the grass plants.
So leaving your grass like 3 inches tall.
All the time.
When you mow, it's still always 3 inches tall.
Right. And it looks the same when it's cut. It's just that when you walk through it, it's the deeper grass.
And so it's good for it to help it grow more, to have a more thicker grass.
Right. It's a thicker grass. Now, when you first seed a lawn, then you can cut a little bit shorter, which encourages the new plants to send out tillers and to thicken up the lawn. But once the lawn is established, you want to keep it around 3 inches.
Now, that begs a few questions for my lawn. Mm-hmm. We have a country lawn.
Which is a diverse community of plants.
I like that.
You just took all the wind out of my sail there. No, I really appreciate it. That's a wonderful, almost euphemism. But we have a sandy soil, and I'm sure the nutrients are a little on the low side because it's not a lush lawn. It's kind of a basic cover, and the blades are a little on the thin side, so I assume the nutrients are a little bit shy. What can I do to boost this lawn and to get my 3 inches?
Well, the first thing you have to understand is when you have a very sandy lawn, it cannot hold nutrients like a lawn that has organic matter, clay, and silt in it, because all of those particles have a negative charge and they attract positively charged ions, which a lot of the nutrients are positively charged, except for nitrogen. It has a negative charge. And so if you really want to improve the quality over the long haul, then you would add organic matter to that lawn. You can top dress it, but that's a lot of work if you have a large lawn. If you're going to fertilize, you're going to have to fertilize more frequently because the nutrients will just move down through the soil, especially when you have a lot of rain like what we've had. So you have to fertilize more frequently and use less every time you fertilize.
And we're talking about chemical fertilizers versus organic?
It's up to you. Organic can be prohibitively expensive, but it's still doable. Depending on the size of your lawn. Normally, a lawn fertilizer will have high levels of nitrogen, like anywhere between 27 and 33% nitrogen. It normally has no phosphorus, and you're not supposed to put phosphorus on unless a soil test indicates you need it. That's a state law. And then potassium is very low also, usually about 5 or 6%. And so they'll have pre-mixes available for you. Or if you're doing it organically, you can make up your own, and it would be a little bit of a discussion to tell you how to do the proportions. But like I said, if you have a small lawn, then it's practical for you to use organic products if you really want to do that. But if it's a large lawn, like where I am, it takes me 8 hours to mow everything that I mow.
It's a large lawn.
That's just not going to work.
So if you have a fairly small lawn and you need to reseed because it's kind of thin, parsley, you know, sparsely, does it matter what kind of seed, or it depends on the soil?
Well, it really depends more shade. On the shade versus light.
Oh, okay.
For instance, if you want what we call the Cadillac lawn, then you're going to have a high percentage of Kentucky bluegrass in your mixture. If you are in a shady area, you're going to have a lower percentage of Kentucky bluegrass and a higher percentage of fescues, which are a thinner blade and they're more tolerant of low fertility and shade. If you are putting it in an area that kids are going to play soccer or something like that, you'll have a mixture that'll have more tall fescue, turf-type tall fescues in it, because it can handle that kind of pressure.
Okay.
But going back to mowing for a second, one other thing you want to be sure that you do is have a sharp mower blade. Because if you have dull blades, like if you haven't changed them in a couple of years, they will tend to rip the grass. And when it gets warm and dry, that grass will take on kind of a brown tint along the top, more kind of like a beige or tan. And that affects the overall look of your lawn. So keep your mower blades sharp and balanced. And it's not that expensive to get them sharpened if you don't want to do it yourself. And
where do you go to get them sharpened?
Oh, you can go to John Deere. A lot of hardware stores will do those types of things. And I would change them at least once or twice a season, especially if you hit a lot of rocks. And
or you have a lot of sand, you blow up a lot of sand, that will dull a blade pretty quick too.
Yeah, when the moles make their mole holes and pile the soil up, they can dull the blades faster.
Well, I'll tell a story here. Is we bought a lawn tractor, and one of the two blades was actually put on backwards. So it was backblading it. So it was not cutting. It was beating them.
Beating him. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about, we've talked about weeds in our lawn. What about, you know, controlling the weeds in the garden?
Yeah, that's another thing that happens when you get a lot of rain is that you get a lot of weeds in the garden. And anytime you have open space and moisture, you're going to get weeds. And we spend more time as a species on controlling weeds worldwide than we do taking care of our children.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a major...
That's not a good situation.
Yeah, that's a major time consumer. Well, agriculture is pretty big around the world, too.
Yeah.
But the best way to control weeds is when you put your plants in the ground, mulch right away. And with the warm season crops, I like to use a landscape fabric, which is black, and the good landscape fabrics will last 10 years. So if you were planting your tomatoes and you had them spaced a certain space, you have holes cut in there, you put the plants in. At the end of the season, you can roll it up, get all the dirt off of it. And what I normally do is just lay them on the fence and let the rain wash them off. Then we roll them up for the winter, and it's good for 10 years. Then in between the rows, we'll put down fresh, clean straw. I emphasize the word clean because if you can see a lot of seed heads in it, you're going to have wheat growing in your garden, which is defeating the purpose. So I like to use mulches because it really cuts down on the amount of work you have to do. It also conserves moisture in the soil when it gets dry, if it ever does. This time of year, it would slow down the loss of water. As opposed to if you were tilling in between the rows or doing some type of working up the soil, you have water actually moving from the lower depths up through something called capillary action. So the soils will dry out faster if they're uncovered.
So you're basically wicking it up.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, in our family, we talk about that I like low maintenance, but I actually prefer no maintenance. So.
Well, that's why, so when you get ready to plant your garden, it's good to put down, like, you know, plastic or what did you call the weed?
Landscape fabric. They also call them weed barriers.
Yes. That's the best time to control the weeds in your garden is at the very beginning, correct?
At the very beginning. So when we put out our tomatoes or peppers or whatever, normally what we do is put them on the landscape fabric, put the straw in between the rows, and then you just have occasional weeds to get. And then you can go do something else. Now, you said you like to do low maintenance or no maintenance. Well, the next thing you do is go down to Lowe's, Home Depot, Menards. They all have these irrigation kits.
Yes.
And or you can get drip hoses, and you can put them along all of your plants and set up a system and put it on a timer, and the garden will water itself. So basically all you have to do is go out and do things like keep the tomatoes in the cages or spray for pests occasionally.
You do pruning and harvesting.
Yeah, there's not much pruning to do. Some people like to prune tomatoes, but I don't go through all that extra work.
Well, what's the best time to be in your garden? Morning? Afternoon?
I would say right now, with the kind of situation we have, I prefer to be there in the evening because every morning we've had pretty heavy dews. Mm. And so you come out of the garden pretty wet. And also when there's free moisture on the plants and you're running down through the rows, if you are rubbing up against the plants and some plant has a disease, you can actually spread it that way. Mm. But so I prefer to be out there in the evening. The time to avoid working in the garden is during the heat of the day, like between 10 and 2. That's when you're most likely to get a sunburn.
And it's if you're transplanting plants, it's hard on the plants.
It's much harder on the plants. So it's when I transplant something, I usually will look at the weather, and I'm hoping for a rainy day right after I transplant. Mm. Of course, that's been just about every other day now this year. But that does stress the plants a lot less. And so I'll put them in the evening first. That's my preference because they can go all night under low stress. Second thing would be early in the morning.
Well, you talked about working in the evening, so you like to share the time with the mosquitoes, right?
Well, actually, the mosquitoes can be handled without much trouble. I should have looked at the ingredients, but my wife bought this natural insecticide, and it really works as well as DEET.
Oh, wow.
DEET is the active ingredient in most things like some of the deep woods off, those types of things, and it works. And when we were working in the greenhouses, we used to have what we called the army grade DEET, which was like 99% pure DEET. Nothing bothers you when you have that stuff on. But we would try not to put it on our skin. We would try to put it on our clothing.
So they'd stay away from you.
Yeah, they pretty much would stay away from you. But if you have DEET, they don't suggest you put on more than 20% active ingredient on children. Try not to get it on their skin, that type of thing. So we went to the natural one. And what I do is I wear long pants, long sleeve shirts. It makes it more difficult for them to bite. And I just put the material on my clothing. And if it's really bad, which it hasn't been that bad this year when I put on the natural stuff, I have a very large gardening hat that the brim goes out about a foot.
I got one of those this year.
And my wife made me a big mosquito net to fit right over that, and it goes right down to my shoulders. Oh. So I can go out there when it's really bad and just thumb my nose at the mosquito.
All right.
Now, you mentioned, somebody mentioned about moles. I think you did, Gary, about when we were mowing our lawn and moles. What do we do about moles? Most people don't like them. They don't like what they do to the lawn.
Well, you know, I used to kill moles like most people, but I thought, you know, what's the point? I don't have what you would call a beautiful Kentucky bluegrass lawn, so it's not as big of an issue to me. And so I put up with it. I will roll the lawn every now and then and get them down, but there are two different ways you can kill them, what I call lethal and non-lethal. Which one do you want to start with?
Yeah, that seems to be an oxymoron. You say non-lethal killing.
Yeah.
Well, we're not. No, non-lethal management.
Oh,
let's
management.
Put it that way.
Right.
Yeah, we're not going to kill them. The non-lethal ways of killing them is primarily using a product called castor oil. And you can't just go down to any pharmacy and buy castor oil because it's too highly processed. But they do have garden variety materials, and you can get it in a granular or you can buy it in a liquid. And you want to get the highest level of the active ingredient, which is the castor oil you can get. And what you have to do is wait for it to rain at least a half inch, no problem this year. And then you put the material down and then you water it in, which you have to push it down into the soil. And you actually will get additional damage while they're disliking this material. And it will drive them out of the area for about 5 weeks.
So they'll leave your lawn alone.
They'll leave that area.
Go find somebody else's lawn.
Yeah, so that's one way of doing it. Lethal, there are lots of ways. There's traps. There are baits. Some work and some don't. And there's a whole bunch of things I can tell you that do not work that people try. So I don't know how much time we have.
No, well, we're running out of time. In fact, we need to take a quick break. So, folks, stay tuned, though. We'll be right back with our last segment with the Garden Guy.
Joe Cruz was given the gift of preaching straight, no-nonsense sermons that would melt your heart and lead you to Calvary. And now you can listen to Joe weekdays at 5:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. right here on Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And we have been talking to Gary Heilig, our garden guy, and we've been covering all kinds of topics. When we left, we were talking about getting rid of moles in your yard. And
that's a perennial favorite on the show, it seems like.
Well, we have lethal methods and non-lethal methods.
Well, I got to tell about one non-lethal method.
Go ahead.
I bought this killing trap in It's still in my woodshed, so it's non-lethal. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it the harpoon type?
It has the spears. It must be
the harpoon type.
Yeah. That will definitely kill them if they get caught.
If deployed.
And if you use it the right way.
Okay, so that's what you were talking about, different traps. And
Well, the harpoon trap is the one that most people use, but they don't necessarily use it correctly. The first thing you have to do is identify the runs that they're still using, which are fairly straight. They may come in from a field or something like that. If you're not sure, just push down that area, and within an hour or so, it should be repaired. So once you identify where they're traveling, then the next thing you have to do is set the trap. And with the harpoon type, you pull it up and you can lock it in place. There's a little latch on the top. Don't forget to take that off once you put it in the ground. Otherwise, it won't go off. And there's a little paddle on the bottom that hooks on the side.
It's the trigger.
So when the mole is going through and repairing the soil, he pushes up on that little trigger, and then the harpoons go down and hopefully skewer him. But what you also have to do is find out just how deep the run is so that you know how deep you have to set that trap. Okay. If you're on a soil that is heavier in clay, you may need to do something called priming the trap first, which means you actually push those prongs down into the ground so that when the trap is tripped, they'll go down into the ground as opposed to the trap popping out of the ground.
I see.
And once you set that trap, if you do prime it first, you want to put a little soil over those little holes because any light getting into the hole, the mole will go around it. Also, there are two supports on the side of the trap. You don't want those in the area where he's going to repair because if he sees that, he'll go around. They don't really see, but if he runs into that, he'll go around it. So that's another thing you have to be concerned about. And then the final thing you want to do is if you want to be sure that you don't, one, have light going into the hole, put a 5-gallon bucket over top of the trap. That also helps you so that you don't run over the trap.
Okay.
I have hit one with the lawnmower. And that's those little orange buckets or something from one of the hardware stores works very well for that. Now, they will usually trip the trap within a day. If you have the trap there a week later and nothing's happened, you need to move that trap.
Because they're not using that.
Well, they're missing it or something. Now, what I will sometimes do, they'll go around the trap sometime, even when you do everything right, or at least you think you did everything right. I'll put another trap about a foot later. Because he'll come right back into that row to repair things, and then he hits the second trap.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I don't normally pull the trap out and say, oh, he's skewered and he looks terrible. What I normally do is just pull the trap up once it's been tripped, and if the tip of the prongs is wet, you got him. And you don't have to see it.
Yeah, okay, all right. Are we done with moles?
Well, I want to talk about lawns, the size of lawns. Mm-hmm. We use the term small lawns. What you can, you know, there's a country lawn and then there's a city lawn. Mm-hmm. What is a small lawn?
Yeah, I consider a small lawn about 5,000 square feet or less. And usually those are the ones where you don't need a riding mower. You can just use a push mower on them.
Okay, good.
Now, when we first went to our house, we bought a push mower because we weren't ready to buy the riding mower. Well, on a large area like that, we burnt the mower out in one season. So that's not a small lawn.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about slugs in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
You see there's holes on your hostas.
Hostas, they'll get into cabbage. They'll feed on various flowers, strawberries, those types of things. And if you want a nice, organic, and inexpensive way to kill them, which won't necessarily cost you anything, is to use coffee grounds, not decaf. You want the caffeine because when moles, or not moles, but we've been on these moles for a while, when slugs feed on that, then the caffeine in it kills them, which should tell you something about us drinking caffeine. But anyway, I digress. But you can either save, when you go to a hotel or something, save the coffee and then just sprinkle it in the garden. Start really early in the spring when the slugs are just beginning to come out before they have a chance to reproduce. And you can spread it all during the season. Just sprinkle it around your plants.
So you're saying like when you're at the hotel, they have little coffee makers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have these little things for
packets,
coffee. You can make a packet. It's coffee.
Yeah.
So you can use that.
You could use that.
Or you could go buy a jar of coffee.
Yeah, and you can use the grounds after you've used the coffee, But another thing you can do is just go to places like Starbucks and ask them for it.
Oh,
okay. And they're happy to give them to you.
Yeah, because they're just going to throw them away anyways, aren't mm-hmm. they?
And you know, if you have too much, just compost it.
So just to clarify, you just cast it around the plant on the surface?
You can put it on the surface of the plant or you can put it on the ground.
Okay, and so we're talking about, I have holes last year with my broccoli and Brussels sprouts. Is that the same?
No. Well, slugs can do some damage, but it's more likely to be imported cabbage worm. Mm. You see the little white butterfly that runs
yes.
around?
I got plenty of those.
Yeah, yeah. They lay a little small yellow egg. It's about the size of the head of a pin. They're responsible for most of it. There's also a moth that will do that. There are a couple of different moths that will feed on them.
So I just live with it?
No. If you want to do this organically, there is a bacillus, a bacteria, called Bacillus thuringiensis, or it's called impede, dipel, thurisci. There are a number of different names. And what happens is you mix this up with water, you spray it on the plant, and when they start feeding on it, they get the bacteria in their digestive tract, and it produces something called an endotoxin, and they get sick and die. And you could drink the stuff and it wouldn't harm you.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
I'll apply that immediately.
Okay, now I have a question about asparagus.
Because mm-hmm.
People say, you know, you should have it planted in the summer and then, or in the spring, and it takes a couple years to really get a good, mm-hmm. you know, stand. Can you still plant asparagus? We're in the middle of the summer?
Yeah, you can, if you can get the crowns. So a lot of the garden centers may be out, so you have to order them.
Okay.
But yeah, you can still plant them, because what we do when we plant asparagus is we make a trench about 12 inches deep. You put the crown in there, and then you start to slowly cover that in as the plant grows.
Oh.
So if there are any companies that still have crowns in storage, then yeah, you could plant them. Or if somebody has too much and you want to transplant them, you could dig some up and move them to your garden.
So you're only covering those crowns a couple inches, and then it grows up, and then you cover it.
You steadily cover it over a few weeks, yeah.
I did that completely wrong this year. So.
Well, depending on how big the crowns were, it'd probably survive.
Okay, now what about raspberries? Because strawberries, you always think of June up here mm-hmm. in Michigan. What about raspberries? When do you harvest them?
The summer-bearing raspberries, like Latham, start to come in right after the strawberries. But I also put that on there that if you have not been spraying for that fruit fly, you might get a surprise. Now, we have two different types of raspberries. One is the summer-bearing raspberries, and they only produce on the second year growth, on those canes that have grown for 2 years. Then we have what we call everbearers, like Heritage or Caroline. Those will produce their first crop usually later in the year, usually about August, and they'll continue into October if it's warm enough. And then those canes, they produce that first crop on what we call the primal canes, or the canes that grew this year. Then those canes will die back a little bit during the winter, and they'll produce a second crop about the same time that the summer raspberries do.
Okay, and we're getting into July, and I mean, up here in northern Michigan, the Cherry Festival starts in Traverse City. So what about, you know, growing sweet cherries? Because there's a difference than sweet cherries and the tart cherries.
Mm-hmm.
Do they all come ripe about the same time? You plant them at the same time?
They're near each other, but the thing that most people can only grow tart cherries in their backyard because sweet cherry trees get so large. And there are some new rootstocks. They're called Gisela. It's spelled G-I-S-E-L-A. And number 5 especially will allow you to grow sweet cherries in your backyard without your tree becoming a bird feeding station because it's too big. You can keep a tree like that about the size of the roof in this room or the ceiling in this room, which is about 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it very practical. But the big thing about growing cherries is protecting them from the birds.
So how do we do that?
Birds love that. Well, there are 3 things that you can do, and it does work because I've tried it and it works. This is from an old wildlife specialist from Michigan State University. His name was Glenn Dutterer. The first thing you do is buy Mylar tape, which is red on one side and silver on the other. And you can either wrap it around the trees like you would like tinsel on a Christmas tree.
Okay.
Or you can cut it in sections and hang it like the icicles. It doesn't matter. The slightest breeze as it moves, it reflects the sunlight and it looks like a flash bulb going off. And that kind of startles the birds. The second thing you do, you've probably seen those little balloons that they look like a beach ball and they have a big eye on them. They're yellow and some are red and some are black. You hang those over your tree. You just need one hanging over the tree. And then the third one is the secret ingredient, grape Kool-Aid.
Grape Kool-Aid.
What do you do with that?
Well, you mix it up with a package per gallon of water and no sugar. And you spray it on the tree. And the active ingredient is called methyl anthranolate, which is a fancy word for artificial grape flavoring. And if you were to look at the commercial bird repellents for sweet corn and some of those other things, that's what they use, is methyl anthranolate. And so you put this on just as the cherries are starting to show some color, and you have to use all three together. And the birds will taste it. They can't stand the taste of it, and they'll leave your cherries alone.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
I like
Do you have
that.
Any cherry trees yet?
No, I don't.
But you might be thinking about it?
That's right. But I beg the question, we're in a certain zone, which is a colder zone. Do cherry trees grow in Cadillac?
How cold does it get here?
Yeah, what zone
compared
are we
to, say, Traverse City?
Yeah.
I think we're
a little cooler.
There's zone four. Is that colder or?
Zone four is colder than zone five.
Yeah, we're zone
four. Yeah, most of Michigan is zone five.
Yeah, we're zone four here.
Yeah, you probably get away with it. You might have some years where you'll get frozen out, but that happens all the time in Michigan.
Peaches don't do so good here, so.
Yeah, when it gets too cold, I mean, there are ways that you could get it to work, but the question is, do you want to go through the work?
No, he's not high maintenance.
I'm low maintenance. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
Then forget it.
So what other kind of fruit pests should we be concerned about in our gardens?
Well, if you have grapes, there are some things like grape berry moth that you're going to have to watch out for. There's certainly different types of diseases like downy mildew, powdery mildew, that you should be putting fungicides on to protect your grapes. In terms of pears, if you don't do anything to pears, you'll probably be able to get a usable crop. They may not be the most beautiful pears, but they'll be edible, especially if you're canning them. But there are, you know, certain fungal diseases that can get on pears. And if you haven't done any spraying, you probably already have them. So now in terms of insecticides for pears, you can have a problem with codling moth. You would have missed the first generation. The second generation is usually around late August, mid to late August. So what I would do is watch the reports that come out from Michigan State. There's a website called EnviroWeather where you can get information on what's going on around the state. And you can also get on the mailing list of either Mark Lawnstroth in the southwest part of Michigan or Bob Tritton in the eastern part of Michigan. And they will tell you what's going on in those areas in terms of pests and what you should be watching out for.
Well, what about northern Michigan?
I don't know if they have a northern Michigan person anymore, okay. But what you can do is call your local extension office and ask them who is the fruit specialist for this area, and they can tell you.
So, yes, in our listening area, because we have 12 radio stations all over Michigan as well as Decatur, Illinois.
Upper Peninsula.
It's always best then to call the extension to get information.
And they have the extension service in every state in the nation. So even in Illinois, you can get that information.
Now, you give us a list to work from, and you put fall planting. I'm still getting into summer. So are you serious?
Ordering bulbs for fall planting? That's
right.
Well, yeah. Bulbs are usually put in around September.
Right.
And you've got to order them ahead of time.
You have to order them ahead of time. The reason is that you get serious discounts, anywhere from 30 to 70%.
Oh. I'm all about discounts.
Yeah. And so, and they allow you to buy now and pay later if you want to go for that. I prefer to buy now and pay now.
But so this is a good time, even though you still might be planting because it's kind of a late season because of the rain, you might start thinking about if you're going to be buying bulbs, now's the time to think about it.
Now's the time to actually buy them.
Buy them. Oh, not and, just think about it.
Yeah, they won't ship them until it's time to plant them.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm glad you gave us the heads up on this. Is there any particular bulbs that you like or recommend that we buy for fall bulbs?
You mean in terms of companies?
I'm thinking about varieties.
Oh, it depends on what people like. I mean, there's so many different things. There are crocuses, there's fritillaria, there's daffodils, there's, did I say crocus? Hyacinths, tulips. There's so many different things, and I'm just scratching the surface of what's out there. But, you know, there are lots of companies that have some very unusual things, and get out there and take a look at the catalogs. Once you get on one list, you're going to be on everybody's
list.
Yeah,
you get them all. Okay, what about, we've been talking about diseases. What about tomatoes? Because, you know, tomatoes are going to take a while. You got to kind of baby them, I think.
Yeah, tomatoes always get fungal diseases. The big ones are septoria leaf spot, early blight. Later in the season, you'll get verticillium wilt, which will affect the fruit itself. But the first two indirectly affect the fruit in that it defoliates the plant and it slows down the development of the fruit. Again, I'm expecting a very heavy year of disease this year because of all the rain we've had. I would not be surprised if you already have some of those diseases, and it always starts down at the bottom. So if you're trying to control organically, I would use a copper-based material like a copper sulfate. And if you're not all that particular, then there's a really good material called chlorothalonil, or Daconil is its trade name. And that's a very common fungicide that will control all of the major tomato diseases.
And we pick this up at where?
Any garden center usually will carry either one of them.
So what about fertilizing our vegetable garden? Or we still need to be fertilizing?
Well, it depends. Normally, we suggest that you put down the majority of your fertilizer before planting, but you'll need to put extra nitrogen down about 6 to 8 weeks after you put your garden in. If your plants are looking a little light green, which they could be because since nitrogen has a negative charge, it won't bind to anything. So if you get a lot of water, it just washes down through the soil. So if things are looking a little light green, you may want to do a side dressing of nitrogen.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to run out of time. We're talking about planting cauliflower and then collapsing squash vines. Can we quickly cover
those?
Oh,
yeah, I can do that fast. The reason I put cauliflower on there is it's a good time to put cauliflower in midsummer for a fall crop. Just remember that you have to blanch the leaves, which means you have to cover the curd in order to get that really white curd. And then with squash, usually around July when the squashes and melons are starting to vine out, you have a problem from something called squash vine borer, which causes the vine to die. And so when they start to vine out, that's the time to put on an insecticide, especially around the base of the plant, to kill it before it has a chance to do any damage. And do your spray early in the morning or really late in the evening so it has a chance to dry. And so it's safe for bees. Do not use 7 because 7 is very toxic to bees.
So if people want more information, they can always call the extension service to, like, ask about fertilizer, to ask about, you know, getting rid of, you know, any pests. They'll have information for them.
Yeah, and there is also a hotline, a statewide hotline for people with gardening questions. And their local extension office should be able to tell you that number and when it's being used.
Okay, well, folks, we have run out of time for this July program with our garden guy. And we so appreciate Gary, don't we?
We definitely do.
So stay tuned because we will have next month another topic with the garden guy. Bye, folks.
Bye.